Welcome back to Deep Thoughts. On this rather warm day, not too bad, about 80 degrees here in Huntington Beach. Today's going to be about existentialism. I use the word a lot in different episodes, and it's starting to become more of a popular word as we sort of open our minds in the world. But I want to lay down some distinctions about the different layers of which I think and believe that it's referencing, right? Now, the raw definition is something along the order that you acknowledge that you are an individual and that you take responsibility for all of your actions. And then there's a lot of subcategories of existentialism that talks about your level of responsibility and or acknowledgement of what is good and bad. But I got a whole episode on good and evil, which if you haven't seen, I think it's like 15. It's one of my better works about the subject. And the slow acknowledgement and adaptation of what is good and what is bad. But I want this one to be a episode just how we view ourselves once we open our minds, right? Because we tend to think that life is happening to us, that we are not in control, and that the name of the game is simply to figure out how to deal with what is happening to us. And I just want to repeat this so that it becomes the driving force of this episode in your brain. Imagine the difference between believing that the universe is bigger than you, that consciousness around you is completely out of your control, and that all you're trying to do is essentially, like I've said many times in shows, be the pinball inside the pinball machine and intelligently navigate the bumpers and stuff, right? But what if the whole thing was that you were in control? That it's your consciousness that drives what you experience. Now, right off the bat, you might think, well, geez, I don't control my friends and family, do I? You know, I don't want to be responsible for everyone's ups and downs. If I control the whole universe, then I got to take responsibility for the whole universe. That's not what I'm saying. Imagine the universe, as I've mentioned in previous episodes, as an infinitely dense compression of all things that could occur, and that you and your consciousness are welcome to experience whatever chapter of the book you want to experience at a particular time. I mean, think about it. Think about the true nature of book publishing. Let's take a really big book like Stephen King's The Stand. It's huge. 1,500 pages unabridged, I believe. Well, we know that probably 500,000 copies of that book have been published in paperback or hardcover, whatever. So a bunch of people at any one point in time can open up that book and experience one of those chapters at the same exact time. Two people in two different continents could be reading the same exact sentence at the same time while another one of you likes the scene with the pyromaniac. All right. Well, I want you to think of reality. The stuff that isn't us, the stuff that sort of is the train tracks that take the track down the train, right? If you want to go to Kansas City, what do? You get on a Santa Fe line directly to Kansas City. But if you want to go to San Francisco, you take Caltrans and you go to there. But it's the track that determines where the train goes, and you determine whether or not you're on the train or not. Now, why make an episode like this? Well, the key reason is I'm willing to bet if your life was like mine, you weren't taught any of this thinking by your family, by your friends, by school. The name of the game is to get as indoctrinated as possible, to adopt paradigms as quick as possible, and to ensure that those paradigms allow you to, quote-unquote, function in society. Now, before I go too off the rails, to continue my train analogy, I am by no means saying to throw everything out that you've been taught. By no means. But to maybe take the analogy and turn it on its head. If I bought any one of you a really cool tool chest, I'd think that 99.9% of you would always look at the tool chest. You'd say, wow, someone got me a tool chest. I can't wait to find a reason to use these tools. Virtually no one would say, wow, I wonder how those tools are going to use me. Because the paradigm of a tool has always been sold that you are the operator of the tool, and it is literally reduced to your imagination as to how those tools can be used. And perhaps there's an exception if you buy a car and you're now fixing your engine with those tools. Someone else designed the engine in that car, and so you're having to navigate around their design principles. But regardless, the tools do not control you, but somehow life, because it is physically perceived as being grand and much bigger than you, dominates you, limits you. But what is life? I mean, really, ask yourself the question, what is life? All we really notice is the consciousness inside our head, right? As I've said several times. So now we look out using our eyeballs, and we listen using our ears. And those are the only two senses that really give way to the concept and the paradigm that there's something physically larger than us. It's just these two things, right? All the other senses that we have, touch and taste and all those things, those are very localized, right? Those things are happening inside you, right on top of you. You don't have necessarily any senses projecting. With the advent of virtual reality that's coming back here, we now have individuals learning that as soon as the screens achieve a certain level of pixel perfectness, and sound is already there, that when you put on a fake reality, right, a screen in front of you, and you have a great headset on, your ability to discern reality is going to shift. And then what's going to happen is, because you know you're in an artificial construct of a virtual reality theater or a virtual reality headset, you're going to be able to grasp the idea that reality is perhaps a completely different thing than you grew up with, thinking that it's all this stuff out here, right? For instance, if I put you in a closet and I said, run a mile, that'd be a horrific experience, right? You're running a little tiny 3-foot circle until you reach a mile. But if I put you in a wheat field and I say, run, oh, it's so much easier. One direction, just keep running until you pass out, right? Somebody designed this thing. Someone designed reality, and that is what we have been living in. But if you look at the world and you look at, you know, how various things like racism are taught, typically, right? Hate is taught. Fear is taught. So is everything else. So what I want to do with this episode is make sure that we take a little walk together down this path of existentialism, that we think about what it means down to a study level. Some people we call deer-eyed. You know, they got deer eyes, or they're sheeple. And, well, they exist, man. They exist 100%. And the difference is, with those individuals versus you, and I mean quite specifically you, if you're listening to my voice, is that you are aware, at least in part, if not in full, that you have consciousness, that you are an individual. And I want you to make sure that you understand that you are utterly privileged to have brought yourself to this stage. Nobody brought you here. You did that yourself. And literally, give yourself a pat on the back, because that's what that's all about. From that point, you've essentially joined a club that is more in tune with the rest of the consciousness of the universe that is not currently being saddled by a mortal coil, the spiritual realm. If you want to be closer to God, you understand that you're an individual, but you also understand that you have probably accidentally, unless you had really cool parents, right, or guardians, that you have limited your perspective up to this point, up to whatever point you became conscious of yourself. And some of you have had a lifetime of this, you know, at one level or another. You know, and quite frankly, I haven't done the math on it, but maybe there is some benefit, some sort of psychological training wheels, to have some paradigms as a young person and then shed them at a later date. Although, if I had to put my money on it, I'm willing to bet that's not the case. But I have not raised a child from scratch into this sort of freedom. And I think it would be extremely hard to, and you know, without having the wealth to keep my child completely out of the school systems worldwide and to teach them myself, I don't think it would be easy to teach your kid open-minded thinking and existentialism and responsibility for themselves and then put them in the school system. Because the school systems are there to pressionistically pound it out of their soul. Demonize left-handedness, you know. But now this episode, I want to have something sort of driven in your brain. And this is sort of all the episodes, just so that you know. Now, just as an analogy of what I'm trying to do with this show, is that, you know, there's been Egyptologists that have discovered tombs in the Valley of the Kings, right? Incredibly ornate tombs that I don't think under any circumstance could be easily forged. You know, for any people that want to throw away all the history of the Egyptians for whatever reason, there's a couple factions on the line doing that. But, you know, there's an archaeologist that comes in and finds the tomb. They move a stone, they pierce a wall, and inside is the first chamber of probably several chambers where they would store, say, the bust of King Tut. And one of the ways that you can assure yourself that King Tut was real is that he was African in his physical design, right? His lips are African, his nose was African. And I assure you that the white pasty bankers of the world that try to usurp and steal everyone's inventions would never have wanted that bust to have anything to do with African blood. It's not even remotely Arab blood, right? And I love that. I love the fact it was carved in gold and there was nothing they could do to undo it once they exposed it and took a picture of it, right? It's fantastic. But this show is merely, if I get my goal, removing the stone off of the chamber of consciousness for any episode topic that's there. Now, I'm going to walk in, just like you're going to walk in, to the subject matter, and I'm going to say, oh my God, it looks like this, this, and this, but I could be wrong. But with this particular episode, I really want us to sort of do something we haven't really done before, which is open up dialogue to say, what would we do with full consciousness? You know, we don't wake up in a deterministic state with our consciousness. And what that means is, for those people who are religious and they believe, they say that thing, well, God's got it all written in a book, you know. It's called determinism, and it's also in physics. It's a really, really dangerous way to think. And the main reason is very simple. If God's got it all written down for you, then you could essentially do anything that you want with your life. Become a complete creeper, pedophile, a murderer, a totally selfish person. You could have 10 kids and never raise them. You could do anything that you want. Because at that point, you can always fall back on your blank check to consciousness, which is determinism. I don't have to think about anything. I don't have any accountability. What I'm doing is what God wants me to do, you know? Screw that, all right? I don't think many people really do that. Yeah, no one, I don't think, who watches this show thinks that, right? But now, let's say you buy what I'm saying. And I don't want you to ever do that without your own massive analysis / research. And, you know, you don't have to read someone else's opinion to do research. Research is your own opinion, but really, really thought out, you know? If reality is what I've suspected it to be for 20 years, which doesn't mean anything, or I could suspect something. There's people who suspected the Big Bang existed for 50 years and they're still totally wrong. But that this is an infinitely densely packed set of states in some sort of universe of energy whereby every configurable state that could exist already exists at the same time. It isn't changing. We are moving through it and experiencing it. Which means, relative to the center point of my soul, somehow I actually control where I am in this big box. I always imagine sort of a Borg cube, to be honest, and it's just this infinitely dense packed grid, and you have a XYZ coordinate of, you know, left, right, up, down, you know, in depth, but you also have T, which is time. What time are you inside this grid, which might be infinite, who knows, of possible experiences? If you think of yourself as in there, you might then think, well, geez, then I control reality. and you may actually control reality. But what would happen if? I mean, this is the, here's a mind-bending question for you that I'm still trying to think through. What if you controlled your reality, but you didn't know it? How fucking weird would that be? You control reality, but no one has ever told you, because everyone's lost the tome of knowledge, right? That, but you don't know it. Think about it. I'm not saying you're God. You're still, and I'm not saying that because my ego is less than a creator ego. I seriously, I don't know if I'm controlling stars and whatever the hell in your life, I would be shocked. But what if you do completely control what you run into in life? But no one's ever told you. And sure, there's The Secret. There's What the Bleep Do We Know. There's Tony Robbins. There's Shirley MacLaine. What happens to reality if you're just bumbling through, but you're still the controller of your particular instance of reality? I just think that's mind-blowing. How many times have you had your current experience echoed into other locations in reality? I'll give an example because that sounds like it makes no sense. You're typing an email or some type of text response on your phone, and you are selecting some pretty choice words. Words that aren't spoken often. And you're almost thinking, geez, I'm pretty good at this, right? And then somehow, the TV that you have running, a character at the exact time you're typing three words together says exactly those three words together, and they're not common, right? They're not articles and sentences. And you look up on your phone, you're like, did that person just say what I just typed? And you pause it and you replay it, and sure as hell, they said the same exact three words that you've got your cursor blinking in inside your phone. And you think, what the hell? That's not a glitch in the system. That is you for a moment projecting reality, I believe, from where you are into every medium that could possibly echo the frequency that you are exuding. Sort of the holographic reality substrate, right? I've been in my smoke shop. And we have, we're watching some show or having some conversation, and some famous celebrity comes up, but they're antiquated. They're old. They haven't been on camera for a really long time. They have a complex name, and within 1 minute, somehow it's mentioned on television. Or it's the next show we play and they're not a main character in the show. We didn't see them in the description or the actors list. And no one's ever seen the movie before, but there they are. Tap them 4 or 5 times at my smoke shop. It wasn't like it was an event that pined. You know, it wasn't like, Aerosmith is coming into town. We've all seen the promo material, but we didn't pay attention. And then Aerosmith comes up in a conversation because we've subliminally seen advertising. It's not like that at all. That, I believe, is an instance of where we see ourselves controlling reality, potentially. But then the big question comes up, well, you're here, right? I'm talking into a microphone. It's being recorded in a computer. I got a camera here. That's being recorded on a little RAM stick. Eventually, I mix them together, and I cut it all down. I add the intro and the outro. Then I post it on this thing called YouTube. My bits are saved on a server. Some of you come through podcasts, some of you come through video. So do we really exist in the same realm? I think so. I think you are your own consciousness. And for whatever reason, just like when you get in traffic on the 405 here in LA, or you go to a concert, or you go to a restaurant, right? Haven't you guys ever thought about the fact that you go to a restaurant, one that maybe has a line, and you arrive there, and let's just say, to make it even more interesting, for whatever reason, the second you walked in, not a single human being was in that restaurant, and then within 10 minutes, there's 15 people behind you. Or you're at Disneyland, you choose to go on a ride, and then there's 400 people behind you. And you think, isn't it interesting that I can see the order by which people decided to ride this ride? All the people behind me decided to ride the ride after me. Especially if you come completely across the park, so you have the longest walk. It's fascinating. You're in traffic with people that have to go somewhere or choose to go somewhere. I think that's the analogy of reality for us, for this particular design, the human being design, and wherever we are, right? But now, how would this change our daily lives? If we believed in the consciousness, the soul, perhaps, if you want to call it that, if you believed that you had a deterministic power on the next second of your life, what I always say is choose the best second that's coming next. Now, just like an old dog learning new tricks, most of us are old dogs. No matter if you're 15 years old listening to this, if you weren't taught to do this from birth, then you're already an old dog when I say you can choose the next second of your life, just like The Secret says, just like What the Bleep Do We Know says. But now what if a creator came down, whether it be an alien for some of you, or a god, or something else, Buddha, and this spiritual being came down to you and said, okay, I'm going to give you the secret of the universe, and the secret is you're running it. Perspective to your existence, you are running your reality. You choose how to interact with other individuals that are running their reality. Now, in a totally non-metaphysical way, that's sort of how we believe it works anyway. But the more that we're forced to interact with other people's decisions, the more we believe that we don't have control and that we are insignificant. I believe that on this planet right now, there might be 7.5 billion other human beings on this planet, all making different decisions, some of them unified in one way or the other. Most of us have at least a bunch of different ideas than the others. So doesn't that, by proxy, by sheer design of mathematical reality, cut down on my ability to control the universe? But this being says, no, not at all. If you want to live in a reality where those people are different, then you feel them different. You will them different. I got an episode I'm cutting together in the house right now. It's on positivity, sort of. But there's a balance, isn't there? There's a balance that we want to control our lives, but at the same time, we like serendipity. We like randomness. We like adventure. We like entertainment, and entertainment in one form or another is randomness. You know, you want to buy an album of your favorite musician once a year and have 10 to 12 songs that are just top 10 songs in your opinion, and you want that infinitely. Right? Until the day you die, you just want another album and another album. And you don't want to write the songs. You don't want to go through all the labor of putting it together. Even if you are a musician and you're doing it for others, you still want albums made for you. So we have this sort of catch-22. I want to control my life, but I want a lot of a control for me. There's a great Twilight Zone about a gangster who gets shot at the beginning of the episode. And this big gentleman comes up and he acts like his butler and he says, well, nice to meet you. Come with me. I'm here to serve you. And the guy's really disoriented. He's like, who the hell are you? And he says, just come with me. Takes him up to this penthouse suite. He says, what would you like? He says, what are you talking about? He says, oh, tell me what you want. And he thinks it's a big gag and he keeps trying to, you know, put his gun in this old guy's face. And finally, the old guy convinces him. He's like, look, I will get you what you want. Do you want money? Do you want women? What do you want? And the guy's like, oh my God, I get it. I'm dead and I went to heaven. So he gets a couple chicks. He gets a bunch of hangers on. He gets money. He goes to a gambling place. And eventually he gambles all night. He's playing craps and everything and roulette. And he just wins. And finally he realizes that sucks. You know, this man's definition of heaven is just bullshit. So he yells at the old man. He says, man, you know, mix it up a little bit, Jesus. The old man says, okay, so you want me to make you lose every once in a while? And the guy's like, well, yeah, but I don't want you to control that either. I just want it to be like it was. And the twist at the end of the episode is that he realizes he didn't go to heaven at all. The old man laughs in his face and says, oh, you think that your kind goes to heaven? Whoever said you ever went to heaven, that was your idea. You're in the other place. And what the irony of the episode is that the definition of heaven as held by virtually every sheep in this world is exactly what that episode portrayed right in front of you. Nirvana, hell, a stateless universe, just one of complete shallow gain. So let's say you sort of gain consciousness of this notion that you are struggling between what you want to be controlled for you, which is your, I would say if you're spiritual, it's God's gift to you. That's why you want someone taking care of business. It's not to be belittled to any being, which is what a lot of scientists will say about religious people. Oh, it's because you think you need someone over you. It's like, no, I don't want to run the whole show. How about that? How about just very basically speaking, the amount of synaptical tissue I have to liaison with my soul, which has the sort of like the entire library of the universe per se. You know, I don't want it all at once, man. I don't want to know everything at once. I'll be a Q. Who the hell wants to be a Q? Go see Star Trek if you need a reference on that. So we want to control a bunch, but we don't want to control the majority. So now, is ignorance bliss in this formula? Is it best not to know that you exist? Well, if you go into the science with a capital S, the secular world of a Neil deGrasse Tyson or a Stephen W. Hawking, you will gain a scientific regiment of ignorance about your consciousness. They don't talk about consciousness. And how utterly, utterly screwed up is that? I want to use the F-bomb so bad right now, I'm trying to cut down. These authorities of existence don't talk about consciousness. When you live in it every single day, a Kurzweil doesn't worry about consciousness. He worries about a computer gaining the random pattern of what we might label as sentient thought. We have it. And don't let anybody tell you that we don't have it. Because at that point, you will be lobotomizing your very existence. You'll be frying the circuits of your soul, or of, not really of your soul, but of your mortal coil to access your soul. I think it's interesting. Once I took LSD a couple times, I realized, it's like you can't see it until you see it, right? Until you take LSD, in my opinion, and I don't know what ayahuasca does, I don't know what the other stuff does, but for LSD, those who haven't taken it have very closed minds, and it's not their fault. It's what the Prussianistic society of teaching tells you. You know, the Prussianistic world, just I'm making these references, it's a form of education developed 800, 900 years ago that was designed to propagate the neural net of the left brain, which is your logical, compliant, subservient, serfdom, docile people to a government, to a nation state, such that a monarch or a banker that has right brain and left brain balance could control you. Our education system in America, and I believe in much of Europe, is all Prussianistically designed. I have one of our listeners, Jared, to thank for pointing me in that direction a year ago. Now then, let's acknowledge one thing as well. When getting into the existential conversations about existence and what we might be, there are individuals who suffer from anxiety. And usually it's not in this area. Usually, it has to do with this belief that they don't control their lives. That life is happening to them, and that they're not essentially controlling their world. Sometimes it's a sheer level of moving parts that can freak a person out. And it's not going to be a popular thing to admit, but I'm going to tell you right now, certain bloodlines in the world have lived very beautiful, beautiful, primitive existences in perfect balance with nature. I think we all suffer from what I'm about to say a little bit, but for instance, if you trace your history back, say 200 years, and you find your families living in more rustic areas, and it just gets more and more rustic and more primitive each 100 years you go back, then the neural nets in your DNA currently may be insufficient to deal with the bullshit that is thrown at you, and therefore anxiety starts to creep up on you. You're beautiful. You are in complete balance with nature as it really exists, which is extremely simple. That's the beauty of the universe, not the defect of the universe. What man has done is convince himself that we are so civilized by making everything complicated. Right? Look at how complicated life is right now. My family members who lived 60 years ago, the man went to work, earned the money, the woman stayed home and raised all the kids, and at night they all came together and had pizza night and watched a movie maybe or something at the local theater, chilled out and read books and craft things and, you know, just went on picnics and, you know, just had a beautiful life. But it was simple. It was intimate. It was loving. It was balanced. And believe me, we didn't worry about what we worry about today. The demons that we have running around like crazy today only existed in the press. Imagine the 50s where, you know, MacArthur is trying to chase down all the commies. The 40s, you know, it was the Nazis and the Japs for Americans, right? There's always some, you know, real events that are taking place where people, like, you know, the horrible massacres in Nanking and China, stuff really happens in all of Europe, that sort of thing. But without bankers financing both sides of wars, life is actually pretty beautiful and pretty simple. And so, of course, it gets overwhelming when you have bills coming in every single day, you know, all these weird charges, and you're supposed to memorize the tax code. They tell you that ignorance of the law is no excuse. It's not a defense in court. Now, think about that. There's two things that you're supposed to know in America. One is the voluntary tax system. If you're an individual, not a corporation or tobacco and firearms, which is where you have to mandatorily pay taxes. But as an individual, it's an elective. Whether you know that or not, that's the truth. And then there's just straight up laws. There's your national laws and your state laws. And there's probably some district laws and ordinances as well. It is a physical impossibility for one human being to know all the tax codes and to know all the laws respective to your geological location, right? It's physically impossible, and there is not a single human being on Earth that knows it all. Not one. So the law says that the physical impossibility of knowing all these things makes you a criminal. So you better not make a mistake. You better know everything without knowing it. And that's one reason why people can get completely overwhelmed. Buy a house. Do all the paperwork to buy a house and tell me that you're supposed to know all that stuff before you buy a house. Hey, how about it's a structure in the world and there's a price tag on the front. And if I got that money in my hand, the only thing that makes it complicated is that some guy might pay you more for it. That's it. Shouldn't be any paperwork. Besides, I'm buying this house. Well, my bank's going to give me a loan with a fixed rate interest rate on it, gain on it, right? Say I need 600 grand. The bank says, I'll give you 600, but you got to pay back 700. No interest, but we get to, own you if you don't fucking pay the money back, right? I slipped an F-bomb in there. But I'm getting into specifics, and I wanted to dive into it and get into some of those acidic moving parts of reality, because that's what keeps us from, I believe, comfortably dealing with who we are as individuals, because there's tons of distractions. Tons of distractions. I've been with individuals that come visit me. They love television. They even love the commercials between the television. They got a comment about every single commercial. They love it. Oh my God. Oh, that thing is. Oh my gosh. Look at that car. Oh gosh. You know, that car is different than that car. And this is really. When none of that affects their life, right? The one thing they're not doing is living their lives. Theirs. Who they are. They've been completely distracted away, you know, from who they are. They've outsourced their being to other forms of reality. I've been intimately involved with people who outsource their whole reality to other people's realities. Never once taking a day out and living their life until someone, you know, perishes, someone dies. And then all of a sudden you're forced to deal with the here and the now and the beautiful intimacy of communing with other humans. That's at least one of the giant things we're supposed to be doing here, I assure you. I'm always telling you guys that the three hemispheres that I try to manage is self, family, and work. But I'm going to tell you that one of those two is a paradigm of adoption. The self is obviously something that we all have, and we all have to deal with it. We all should deal with it and make it a beautiful thing to reinvent yourself and fortify yourself. You know, reinventing doesn't have to be some about-face behavior. It could just be affirming what you're doing that you like and just becoming the very best at it, right? Optimizing your life to get more of it. Family, well, I wish upon you all family. Some partner, some spouse, regardless of your situation, that you can share your life with and bounce things off of and have deep conversations if that's what you want, you know? It's whatever you want, whatever the two of you want. Or if you're going to procreate, well, hopefully your children are those sorts of beings that help you expand who you are. But the one that's not necessarily bound to the universe is work. Now, I'm going to qualify this for a second. If we didn't have the luxuries that we have as a modern world today, where you can just go down to a restaurant, buy whatever food you want, I mean, criminy, you could eat a different food every day of your life in America. Every restaurant has, you know, 10 to 30 dishes, so that multiply that times every restaurant, and, you know, as long as you got the cash, you'll have that luxury. So working is related to the fact that you can't own anything in the world, really. Right? You can't own your house. You can pay for it, but you got to pay property taxes. So you can't really own anything. So there's no place where we in this world can ever escape slavery, because nothing is sovereign, meaning you can't own it and you can't be left alone. You know, I couldn't, I mean, the only thing I could do to be in this home and not be messed with is to buy the house, give the state enough money, maybe in the form of millions of dollars, to leave me the fuck alone. Take all my cars and just prepay all the insurance. In California, you can pay, it used to be $30,000. I'm sure it's probably like 40 or 50 now. But if you can walk down to the DMV and deposit anywhere between 30 and 50 grand, somewhere in there, you don't have to have insurance. Because it's some weird clause of like you show yourself as being financially powerful enough to take care of yourself and someone else if you get in an accident. It's sort of ridiculous because you can rack up $1 million debt hurting someone in a car accident. But whatever. You negotiate with every bill collector a massive advance payment. And you put enough money in that between now and the end of your life, no one can bother you. Then you're set. Then you can focus on yourself. But no one has that, right? And so the work sector is essentially something we sort of feel like we agreed on. But again, if we lose all the amenities of life, then we have to find water somewhere every single day. We got to find food somewhere every single day. And that would be our work. Survival would be our job. So the survival one, or sorry, the work sector is one that's relative to your time and space, right? So what do you need to construct to be able to analyze yourself, to meet yourself, as I like to say? Well, it gets complex a little bit. It's simple and it's complex all at the same time, but it's not that complex. Let me throw this at you. You know, existentialism is, again, defined as you acknowledging the fact you're an individual. And by proxy, you are responsible for your actions every day. No one else is responsible for you. No one's here to help you. You must weigh in your mind based on your relativity in the world that you're in, what is good and what is bad, and decide whether or not you're going to be a good person with empathy and sympathy, or are you going to be Hillary Clinton and kill every person in your way until you get what you want, right? But that's you on an individual level. The second you want to share your life with someone, friends or family, you have to incorporate them into your circle. Now, I think that you guys, if you've listened to, you know, at least 30 episodes, you know that my thing is that you really need to understand who you are before you can really create intelligent circles of other individuals in your life. You know, I hear a lot of people say that they don't want kids because they'll be in public and they'll see really bad kids. And I think that that's interesting because you raise your kids. If you raise your child from the second that they're born, as opposed to waiting for them to be little tyrants, and then you try to move in and say, oh, well, we don't do that. And your kid's going, well, who the hell are you? I'm already four. I got 4 years out of 4 years where I do what the hell I want. And you're coming in here telling me I can't? Go away, you know? But if you establish yourself as the authority figure to your children, again, believe me, you don't need to spank their butts much. Diapers are the greatest thing when you have kids, because the thing that hurts them the most is not a switch on their butt. What hurts their feelings the most, if you establish a great connection with your child, is disapproval. My mommy and daddy don't approve of the child. They'll do anything to correct that problem. So a little pat on the butt when they have a diaper, they don't even feel it. But they know that there's the energy in the room for a split second of like, I told you not to do that and you're doing it. You know, and your kid might even cry because they're like, I don't even know how to deal with how heartbreaking it is that I just screwed up. And I forgot that you said not to do that. And so you give your kid a big hug, you know, so you correct and you hug. And it's just like, okay, well, you do love me and you're here for me. You're just trying to remind me. And it just gets put Pavlovianly in there until they live a better life because you were participating, right? So just know, you design your children. As long as you participate. If you don't participate till last second, yeah, you'll be one of those parents walking around telling everyone how shitty children are. Yes, there's exceptions to the rules. I'm not trying to piss on everyone who's had a rough child. But now you try to work with adults. Now you can raise a child to be like you, right? And hopefully if you're with your spouse, you've picked a spouse that's pretty similar to yourself. Remember, compatibility is what's your purpose in life, not, hey, I like that sitcom too. Or that band. That stuff is cyclical and goes away. When you say, what is your purpose in life, person? Because I like you and I want to share my life with you as long as we're on the same page. That answer will determine everything. And then when you raise children, your purposes are congruent and boom, your kid is in a beautiful home, right? So you got a little bit of homework on your spouse too. And don't dislike them if they're not like you. Just maybe don't marry them. You know, don't have any kids with them. Make them your best friends. Or acknowledge the differences and love the differences. But your friends, as you are trying to grow into who you are a gigantic part of who you develop into, right? I was watching some old interviews with Prince, and they were asking him why he lived in Minneapolis, Minnesota his whole life. Like, you got enough money to live anywhere. Why the hell are you stuck in Minneapolis, Minnesota? And he made a really beautiful point. He said, I have learned that people become who they surround themselves with. And he said, if I go off to the big city and I surround myself with a bunch of transient record executives and other band members that are coming in these really weird states of fear that they're either not going to remain on top or whatever, or they're going to sell out just to make an album, because I don't want to be around that energy. I want to be around love. And he goes, that's why I stay in a rural community of Minneapolis, Minnesota. He did it till the day he died, right? So you have to pick your friends carefully. The ones that you really, really let in your circle. Wherever you just physically hang out, you got to be careful. Now, because of media, you know, I'm media. I'm coming at you through either audio or video. So you'd have to be careful with me and make sure that I'm not pulling you away from what you believe to be the most important things in your life. And I would take absolutely no offense. I take no offense when someone unsubscribes from the channel and moves on. They have made a decision. There's something I'm saying. There's a paradigm of thought that they don't want to put in their world. And I celebrate passively the fact that they know that. But I'm saying all this because in order to meditate on who you are and make some decisions and have some insights into what you are, you're going to have to give yourself some space to do that. But let's go back to the analogy I was giving you, the story I was giving you, where whoever you respect as a creator comes down and tells you that you run your universe. And yes, you are encountering other souls that are running their universe. And there's a bit of a holographic universe where the transverse waves of their thoughts are hitting your thoughts. And so you do affect each other's existence. But if you really will it, you can have it. Yeah, there's even biblical references, which I think are great, which is, you could move a mountain if you had the faith to do so. I think that's interesting. You know, I've met, obviously, a lot of very talented people in the world. And when you get in the room with them and you listen to them, you'll start to feel what they used to talk about, what they used to say about Steve Jobs is he had this reality distortion field, is what they used to say. And Steve Jobs would walk in the room and ask a bunch of people to do something, or an individual to do something, and the individual had never perceived their abilities to be so capable. And they would argue with him that that is impossible. And you see this in Star Trek all the time, where, you know, Captain Kirk is calling down, or whoever's the captain, calling down to engineering and saying, hello, you know, how soon can you get the warp fields, warp engines back online? And they're like, it'll be, 12 hours. And they'll say, you've got 6. And they always make it happen, right? Well, that's exactly the reality distortion field. Someone has more faith in you than you have, and they push you. And if you meet super successful people, they don't take no for an answer easily. And it's not because they're complete jerks. It's because they never accept no for an answer themselves. Now, there are some things that we haven't figured out exactly how to do, so you can definitely get yourself involved with some things that seem impossible your whole life. And maybe they are. Who knows? But I hate to even say that. The old saying is, everything's impossible until it's not. So if you actually woke up with a belief in your system, let's just say I give you a little psychotic pill, and all the pill does is it makes you believe what I'm about to tell you, which is that you run your universe. You actually walk down the hallway of your home, wherever that is, and you feel it in your bones that you control your reality. How do you think your day might change? Don't you think something would go in your favor more that day than other days? I've talked about it, 80 episodes ago about rolling dice, or die, I should say, during a role-playing experience, and I controlled the die because the story got so incredibly realistic for me that I transposed the fictional story to my reality. And I made a conscious decision that the fictional villain in this game was going to die. I had to roll a 20-sided die, and if you hit 20, you get double damage. And that's what I needed to kill this person on the first shot, to never fight him, just kill him. And on two occasions, reality just gave in. It was unbelievable. I folded reality around me. I owned every freaking molecule of existence. And I got 20s. Only 2 times did I ever feel that feeling, and both times I got 20. Oh, sure, I begged a million times to get 20. It's like when you beg in Yahtzee, come on, Yahtzee, and then boom, you hit it, and it's just sort of like it's a surprise to you. But maybe it's not actually a surprise to the universe. So this comes to another word. If I needed you to jump off a proverbial cliff of trust, just like Indiana Jones, Episode 3, where he's trying to cross a chasm to get to the Holy Grail, and it's just a chasm. And he's smart enough to throw rocks out, and he sees the bridge that has been painted to be invisible. It's got a camo painting. And then he's able to walk across this little green screen bridge he's got there on the set. The second you can see it is the second that you can walk over it, not willy-nilly. You know, Indiana Jones walked across that bridge, which had no guardrails, very carefully, right? But he got to the other side. He met the guard. The sentry guard's been there forever, drinking from the grail, keeping himself alive for God knows how many years. And he gained knowledge, he gained enlightenment, and gained the power to save his father's life. Life is also full of seemingly infinite variables when it comes to the human mind and the human consciousness to hang on to what's going on. I'm staring at a backyard with a bunch of gorgeous plants. I'm probably staring at, without a doubt, 1 million to 2 million leaves on a shrubbery. Covers this wall in front of me. There's one over here on the back of my fence. I can sort of conceive of them as a whole, but I can't conceive of them as individual leaves. And the circumstances that control our lives are potentially that complex. And so the notion of controlling your reality starts to overwhelm you if you really want to take it meticulously serious. Well, let's dial back. If someone asks you, if you could be anything in the world that you want to be, what would that be? Think about how simple that answer is. You're not saying, well, I want to be, I would like to have molecule 4 trillion to resonate at this particular frequency. No, no, no. You're like, hey, I want to be a father. I want to be a mother. I don't even really care about my job. I just want to be the most successful father, mother. I want to be a great son, daughter, whatever. I want to work in movies. I want to write film. I want to write really good films of this certain type. As soon as you start defining whatever it is you want in life, it's actually pretty darn simple. And it could just be an emotion. You want happiness. You want purpose. Remember, purpose is love. Love is purpose. So maybe you just want something to shake out of the universe to give you the exact Christmas gift that you want. Remember that whole question I mentioned earlier, which is we want to control our lives, but we don't want to control the universe because that's just too much. The universe isn't me, but it sort of is, kind of. If the stars are real, then there's a bunch of worlds out there, and I don't want to have to think about those. I don't want to have to think about what's going on a block from here. I don't want to think of the helicopter that's flying over my house right now. I don't care if it's there. I mean, it doesn't help my microphone at all. It's actually a plane. But what if you designed a Christmas gift for yourself that is a theme of life? It is an emotion of life. And you just simply said, you know what I really want to control is the fact that I find happiness. And I don't want to determine everything that happens, like the guy in the Twilight Zone. Oh, I win at this craps table. I win at that roulette table. This girl's willing to sleep with me. I drink booze. Why don't you just say, I want to be happy, and that's what I'm going to control. And just see what the universe brings you. You'll be amazed. The phone will ring. You'll get a message in Facebook. You'll go to a location in the world, a picnic. You'll meet someone really amazing. If you're trying to sell something at work, oh my God, that deal that you thought went sour comes back right in your lap. I've had it happen to me in the last week. Now, I've got friends of mine who I know that are mentors to me, and they're super negative. They go through cycles, right? They all sit down and eat dinner with them, and they're just super cynical about Hollywood, about filmmaking, about the fact that the world's going to hell. And they resonate that when they go home. When I'm not with them, they resonate this darkness. And so they don't think they control the universe at all. They don't understand that the law of attraction is a big part of this whole game. Then I have friends of mine that really push to make things happen. They just have feelings and they go, look, I know this is going to come through. I don't know how this is going to actually work out. And by God, the phone rang, you know, and amazing things took place. I've had some recent successes like that. Now, I've heard some criticism. We're in this conversation about recognizing ourselves as truly sentient sovereign beings with common law that protects us, right? Protects us on a universe level. It doesn't protect us just in the human mortal coil fashion, right? But I've heard some concerns about people interpreting law of attraction a little too automated. And I would just want to make a button in this episode before I close this off. The criticism was that some people want to be lazy with their existence. And they want to lean on the concept of law of attraction, which actually does work. But the notion is that some people are translating that into, I don't have to do anything but think positive thoughts and positive things will happen to me. What I want to occur in my life will happen to me. Now, I think that there are global themes of life that that can actually happen, but you won't get what you want exactly because you're not going after what you really want. One of the greatest definitions of luck that I've ever heard in my life is hard work. Luck is hard work. And what that really, for me, it gets at the jugular of what law of attraction, you know, level 10 can do for you. And let me give you an example. You want to be happy. And so you law of attraction happiness. You put out happiness. When people are negative to you, you return kindness. You try not to let them rent space in your brain after they are unkind to you. You just let it bounce off. You don't let it go in you. I believe in that particular case of law of attraction, there's very little you need to do besides exude happiness and to believe that you will get it through law of attraction. Now, what I didn't say was that you might get a very specific thing in life with happiness. What's going to happen is that Christmas gift from the universe will show up and say, this will make you happy, but you're probably going to have to compromise some of your goals depending on what kind of person you are. But let's go for a specific, okay? I hate to drone on about Hollywood, but for me, it's my world, and that's where it's a tough nut to crack. Let's just put it that way. But let's say that you want to become a writer for a television show or a film industry of a certain type, and you're just sitting at home imagining, I know I can do it, and I'm just going to think that I can do it, and it's going to happen to me. And this is where the criticism came in quite correctly, I believe. The reality is that you need to learn how to write, which means you got to practice a lot, exactly in the genre and type of writing that you want to actually do professionally. Your feeling of law of attraction, your just obtuse projection into the universe that I want the opportunity to write, will probably pay off. And it'll pay off in that someone will bump into you with that opportunity to give you the audition to get the chance to do this very specific thing that you want. But at that point, this other definition of luck, which is hard work, is going to be the difference between you getting the opportunity and never getting the opportunity, right? You need to show promise. You need to show skill sets by coming up with the script, sample scripts. Pick your favorite show and just write an episode of it. You're never going to sell that episode, probably, but it doesn't matter. They need to read something and know that you have that skill. You have the dedication to finish something that you start, because finishing scripts is a little difficult sometimes, at least good ones, right? We have listeners that are owning their lives, man. They went back to school, and they're creating amazing things, like I've said several times, right? Well, there's an individual working his or her ass off to get what they want. Now, they're not even at the point where they really want the opportunity to show up just yet, because they're not satisfied with their skill level set just yet. They're not going to turn it down if it shows up. But I tell you what, as a person who employs creative people, my main thing is show me how many finished things that you've actually done and tell me exactly what level of participation you did. You know, if you're a little tagger on, you know, like you're a guy that or girl that did something very remote, you need to make sure you tell me that. Like, you know, there's a lot of productions out there in Hollywood web episodes and little tiny independent movies and big movies, and people will get one little job on those gigs, but they walk around like they wrote and directed it. Oh yeah, I worked on Avatar. What'd you do? Oh, I worked in the mailroom at James Cameron's studio, and it was if I didn't deliver the mail, then they wouldn't have gotten done. Well, at that point, maybe you're a really good mail person, but I need to know, and your employers need to know, and that's where the hard work feeds your destiny. But the reason why I made this episode is to ensure that you take one step back from your mortal coil. You set outside yourself, pretty much riding shotgun with your soul, and realize that you're sort of a board member of your soul. If any of you've ever seen the movie Being John Malkovich, it's about John Malkovich just playing himself, and he has a group of people in his consciousness that are being him, and he's essentially the avatar of their decisions. There's been a lot of movies that have done this, right? It was a lot of members inside of someone's brain. Woody Allen did a few, pretty funny. But now I want you to take that analogy and reduce it to one. It's your inner consciousness that is the chairman of the board and the entire board itself. And if you want to surrender part of your leadership to influences from souls that you trust, that's another way to do it. And what do I mean by that? Well, let's say you've lost someone very special to you in life, a father, a mother, a best friend, and you're thinking, damn, they're gone. I really needed their help. And all I can say is, go watch the final scene of Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars to really understand what just took place. Remember the line. For those of you who didn't see it, Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi are doing a total lightsaber fight in the Death Star. And there's this just, it's more amazing than I think most people realize, but Obi-Wan looks over to his left and he sees Luke Skywalker rushing in with Han Solo, Chewbacca, and Princess Leia and the droids, and they're all hopping in the Millennium Falcon to get the hell out of Dodge. And he looks back at Darth Vader and he says, if you kill me now, I'll become more powerful than you could possibly imagine. And Darth Vader, stuck in his myopic evilness, which is what all of our leaders of this world are stuck in, strikes him down. And his body vanishes. His robe just falls into a pile. And the absolute transcendence of this mentor disappears, just like a heavenly ascension. And then, you know, Luke sees it, and he's young, and he is uneducated about the ways of the Force and the ways of the universe. He is pissed off, and he starts trying to fire within the confines of his paradigms of not knowing about the spirituality of the universe yet. But he hops in, and he takes off, and what's the finale of the movie? Luke is trying to use scientific instruments to drop two torpedoes in this exhaust port to get rid of the first Death Star. And he just can't do it. No one can do it. With the accuracy of technology. They're going too damn fast. They're too low. And that's when Obi-Wan Kenobi comes to him in spirit and in voice and tells him, you know, Luke, use the Force. And Luke, I think he brings down his blast shield. And he turns off his, maybe he doesn't bring it down, but he turns off his little medical, or sorry, his little technical assistant, right? And they're all yelling at him from the command center, dude, what are you doing? What are you doing? You need that to make it happen. And he just goes into an absolute state of spirituality. And he sees himself as one with the universe, as defined by the Force, being the life force of the universe, and he puts those torpedoes down that pipe, and kaboom, he overcomes his obstacle by having faith in the universe and faith in himself and faith in the Force that runs this whole show. We know we have souls. You can feel them. They're different than the one thought you have in your brain right now. They're different. It's different than your mortal coil that's going to die one day. And so if you've lost someone, I want you to think of them, male or female, think of them as Obi-Wan Kenobi. And the analogy I like to give my friends goes like this. I moved away from my family at 17. Left them all behind in the Midwest. And I visited them maybe twice a year for a while. Then it became once a year. But I would go home and I would talk to my grandparents about what I was doing. And they were always massively interested in my life. And they just said, talk, talk, talk. Tell me what you're doing. And they didn't understand what I was doing. I try to break it down, you know. And they just said, you're successful, you're making money, and you're happy. You're doing what you love to do. And that's really what I'm trying to get out of you, is the theme of your happiness. But then I lost every one of my grandparents one by one, right? And I thought, at first I was like, damn, they're gone. And I'm going to have to wait until see what happens in the afterlife to see if I'll ever meet them again, right? And it wasn't quite as solidified in my spiritual beliefs at the time. Definitely believing in a God. But then I realized about 10 years later, I thought, now wait a minute. My grandmother that died at 83, well, she now could be with me like Obi-Wan Kenobi's with Luke Skywalker, right? She now knows everything that I'm doing. What she couldn't understand before, she now understands 100%. And by the time my other grandparents passed, I was totally in the pocket for that understanding. And I said, well, They now understand what I'm doing, 100%. And here's the cool part. Going back to my point of mentioning this entire digression, which is this. If you think you've lost your mentors to death, if you think you've lost your best friends to death, your spouses, whatever, maybe even a child, that soul, in my opinion, which is pure energy and cannot be destroyed, it's not the energy we use to power our microphones, right? It's something completely different, unaffected by anything we can do to anything, right? They are with you, advising you, giving you little twings of intuition. That's good. That's bad. Hey, you might want to think about this one. I'm sure they don't sit on you every single decision that you make, but to the degree you invite them, I'm willing to bet, however they do what they do, they're there for you. Like I've said in previous episodes, I only blame myself for the stuff that I do wrong. You know, it's like if I get anything right, I'm like, I bet that's a shared success. You know, my whole bloodline, my whole family line. And again, at that point, what race you are and wherever your society came from doesn't matter. They're infinitely powerful once they pass to the other side, in my opinion. And that's one reason why I believe that secularism and science with a capital S loves to endorse and push any paradigm that makes you believe that they don't exist anymore. That we're just, you know, synaptical meshes of power. Even though they can't tell you how the brain works at all. You're not even taught the glands in this first world, right? The pineal gland has just a scientific function. It has no spiritual, plug to the universe. But they feed us fluoride to make sure that goddamn thing doesn't work right. Why do you think they poison us in our own water, right? Why do you think vaccinations target the brain? You know, barely ever solves any problem it's trying to solve. It just rots your brain. Makes your kid lose the biological mesh that is their brain, which is their liaison mechanism with their soul. They know that if they kill the body, they kill your ability to communicate with your soul. Now, luckily, a lot of autistic kids have proven that some of them get four or five connections to their soul at once, and they're absolutely unbelievably intelligent, but they then struggle to express that intelligence because their mechanical ability to control their body has been impaired. They could be sitting there being the biggest genius on planet Earth, but they can't talk. At least not for a while, until their brains reprogram themselves with some of these mechanisms that were sold. Tear us up, you know? I just came to a realization that a lot of my relatives that are very fanatical, and this is going to sound like a stupid digression, but this just give an example of where I think that we're making positive changes in the universe. There's a lot of the listeners that have understood that fluoride is super bad for you. It rots your pineal gland, gives you osteoporosis, if you're a female especially, and one of the number one things it does is rot your teeth. It makes your teeth explode eventually by expanding and contracting within the enamel of your teeth. Now, having been an Egyptologist for several years, rookie, you know, like an enthusiast, I should say, I know that, you know, mummies in their 70s and 90s had all their teeth. And yes, they had little brushes they would use to brush their teeth. And I'm not saying don't brush your teeth. Christ almighty, you get something stuck in your teeth, get it out. If you eat a bunch of sugar, scrub that crap out of your mouth, right? But by my age, there are family members of mine that have lost three big teeth that shouldn't have been lost. They had crowns all over their teeth. I got one cavity from the age of 9 that I still have a filling, which I need to have pulled out and redone. So I'm going to have one artificial tooth once I get this thing reset. But all the rest of my teeth are fine. And yeah, I'll go in about once every 10, 15 years and get things recoated. But I don't brush with that crap. I brush every day. Trust me. I just don't use fluoride. And I can tell you right now, my brain has never been more on fire than right now. You know? I get comments every once in a while. People are like, well, geez, how do you talk for this long? You know, how do you... And it's not that I'm knocking it out of the park here and there. But, you know, some people, they realize that I have pretty continuous thoughts and that kind of stuff. And they dig the channel. All right. Well, I can tell you the two things that I did to augment my brain to this level of sentient linear thought. Right? and that's getting rid of aspartame out of my life, any sugar substitutes of any kind, and fluoride. I believe that those two things, it took a year and a half before I had the true effect. But like I said, a long time ago, my brain started working so quickly that it became a challenge to commingle with society. It's still a challenge to this day sometimes when I have conversations with certain people who are wonderful people, but they're talking, in my brain, they're talking super duper slow. And, you know, they'll say four or five words and you're like, oh God, I know where the sentence is going to end. And, oh yes, it ends right where, you know, and I know the next statement. I know I can see the absolute container of all of their possible statements because they illustrate so beautifully their paradigm adoption, which is essentially their handcuffs on reality. When I talk about LSD in a positive way, you know, my suggestion is make sure your life is, you go see my episode on LSD, but you know, you want to have your life very well balanced. You don't want to have any skeletons in the closets you haven't dealt with, right? But do me a favor, get rid of fluoride out of your life for at least a year and a half. Get all sugar substitutes and crappy foods out of your life for a year and a half. And then, if you think you have the spiritual calmness to do this kind of stuff, go to some foreign country and do ayahuasca, which I have not done personally, but find a way to get real LSD. It's illegal as hell. Maybe go to a country where it's okay, cross the border of Mexico, hell, I don't know. But you'll find yourself plugging in with the universe like you never have before in your life. And all this stuff will start becoming much easier to understand. I hope this episode was interesting. This is the kind of stuff that I think about when I'm not doing episodes and I think, God, you know, I really want to talk about this, but how do I frame it in a way that you guys can follow along, that I can follow along with myself for over an hour, you know? I don't try to make these episodes more than an hour, but it just happens, right? If you made it this far, thanks for listening as always. If you haven't already, go to mkultraradio.com. From there are all the feeds, from the video to the audio, depending on how you want to get it. Again, I think we've made some drastic improvements in things in terms of the way you get it. The Deep Thoughts has its own audio channel now on iTunes. We retired the old channel completely because we're getting comments about the other show that didn't belong to this show. And I wanted to make sure that if you make a comment about Deep Thoughts, it's about my show. If you want to make comments about the other show, MK Ultra Radio, then you make comments on that side of the fence, right? So that's all cool. And it gives you pretty much exactly what you want and nothing else, right? So we also have a Facebook page. Not a lot of activity on the Deep Thoughts page. But what I want to do is always make sure that every once in a while I get you guys to submit ideas for shows. I have, you know, sometimes I need to hear them again. Sometimes I think I've covered it, and there's some of you who've listened to all the episodes. You're like, yeah, almost got there, but you didn't get there. You know, again, I'm trying to keep the quality of these episodes as high as possible, which is, like I said, I try to replace them if they suck. I've got a season one episode I kind of want to replace, but I don't know quite how to do it, or to replace it in season two and then retire the old one, or what do I do? So I'll figure that out. So anyway, just know I appreciate every one of you. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.